Welcome to today's COVID-19 daily update. I'm pleased to be joined by Dr. Jose Romero of the Department of Health, but also Secretary Johnny Key of the Department of Education, and today Dr. Joe Thompson as well with ACHI. Obviously, with that group, these leaders here will be talking about schools and more specific information related to school starting next week. And that leads me, if you could put up the first slides, first graph, first picture, which is a picture that was in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette today, which I loved. Here you have some high school students that are in the fans. They're identified as Pulaski Academy, but if you'll look at them, the students all have masks on, and then they're putting their arms out to make sure they're properly socially distanced. What a great example for adults and everyone. That's great leadership on their part, showing how serious they're taking it. And that's the kind of carefulness that we need from everyone as we not only want to start school, but finish school, start sports, and finish sports this year. So that was just exciting to see, and I wanted to acknowledge those wonderful young people and the job that they have done. Let's go straight to the cases today. And if you look at our cases over the last 24 hours, we've had an increase of 549 cases. Of course, that is down from the previous day. That brings us to a total cumulative cases of 54,765. In terms of hospitalizations, we've had a zero increase in hospitalizations, and so we're still at 499. We have had additional 10 deaths. That brings us to 641. Dr. Romero will provide additional details on the counties breakdown, as well as a little more information on those deaths. In terms of testing, we had a good testing day, 6,898 tests. That we'll cover. And I also wanted to mention that thus far this month, we have received 10,358 antigen tests. And as I mentioned, the antigen tests are different from the PCR tests. We keep them separately. But I did set a goal as to how many antigen tests we can do this month, and I wanted to report on that number. And so with that, let's go to the graphs, and we can see we've got the correctional cases were a few, but the rest of them were community cases. The trend line, of course, is the important information there, and you can see how it's flat, that we were down and we're flat. Man, that's good news right there. I hope that we can see the future in the same way or even improved way, but that's what we're watching. Hospitalization, since we didn't have any increase, it's flat, and we're not at where the peak was. And then the active cases is good news because that has been on the decline, and those are the people have met the criteria for being recovered, is reduced from that, and so those are active cases that we're handling. And then this is the positivity. You know, the last bar graph doesn't mean that much because that's going to be backfilled as we receive more of the tests by the date of the result. But, you know, the previous 3 or 4 days do mean something, and you can see that they're below the 10% level there, which is a sort of the mark that we're trying to follow and to beat, making progress there. And here's the test where we are for the month with 115,000 tests that have been done. And our goal, of course, is 200,000 total with about 10,000 of those antigen tests. And looks like we've already done that in terms of the antigen test with 10,000. You're getting ahead of me here, but that's okay. Here's the breakdown in terms of where the test results are coming from. So it was a good day with our Department of Health, but look at our commercial labs, and that's looking better there with the number of tests. I spoke with Secretary Hargan today, Deputy Secretary at HHS. I said, are you going to give me good news on testing? Is it going to look better in the future on our commercial labs? He said, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. So we're optimistic about that. I did want to reference again the testing that if you test 180,000 this month, which we will make, That means we're doing 6% of our population each month. This is a good, robust number of testing that we're doing. And while we always want to increase it, we are at a strong level in terms of our testing. And then let me talk about schools for a moment. As you know, we start next Monday in classroom instruction, and we're excited about it. I know that everybody's working hard to get ready for it. The Department of Education is working extraordinarily hard, and we've partnered with ACAI, led by Dr. Joe Thompson, in terms of the data. And as we've mentioned before, everybody wants more specific data broken down to the school district level. ACAI and the Department of Health have worked together on this with the Department of Education, and I congratulate them for increasing the level of detail for our school districts. And this is going to be up on the website, but they've been able to break down the data per district by the number of cases per 10,000. And then also they're able to show the trends for the cases, so they can see are they going up or are they going down. And then they're going to be breaking down, they're showing the test and the level of testing, not the school district level, but at the county level. And Dr. Thompson will talk more about this. In addition, providing the other thing that school districts talk about is give us more information, better, more data, and then give us more options as to and direction as to what happens when we have positive cases. And so Secretary Key will be talking about that, the increased level of options that we want to give them so that they can have more options for modifications of operations as needed depending upon the level of risk in their particular community. And as Dr. Birx pointed out, it's not a matter of the risk in the school, it's the risk in the community that we're really measuring, but that impacts the schools. And we want to keep the schools safe, we have to know what's happening in the community, and a lot of variables there, so we still encourage the districts to call the Department of Health and the Department of Education to get our guidance, to get information, to help understand the data that they're looking at so we can make the right decisions in a quick and responsive fashion. With that, let me ask Dr. Romero to come and make his comments, followed, I think we're going to go to Dr. Thompson and then to Secretary Key.
Thank you, Governor. So, to add some more detail to the numbers that represented by the governor, we have 499 individuals hospitalized. As mentioned, this is not a change from yesterday. The number of individuals on a ventilator are 108. This is a decrease of 6 from yesterday. We have 641 deaths. This is an increase of 10 individuals. 3 of these individuals are from nursing homes, and 3 of these are delayed reporting to us from July. Our recovered number of cases, 48,558, an increase of 792. With regard to the counties, we have 8 counties at over or equal to 20 cases. They are Pulaski at 51, Sebastian 35, excuse me, Jefferson County at 29, Crawford 24, Garland 24, Crawford 22, Craighead 21, Mississippi 20, and Pope 20. Let me take a few minutes to talk about testing and the virus. I want to remind everybody about the virus that I've talked about in the past. As I said before, the virus will do what it wants to do. And it's important for people to understand that once exposed and infected to the virus, it may take up to 14 days before you become positive for detecting the virus or for having symptoms. And that is very important in determining how to use the tests that we have to diagnose this infection. A positive test indicates that you have the virus, that you are infectious, and that you've been infected. That is a positive test. A negative test, on the other hand, where we do not find the virus by PCR, does not mean that you've been not infected, that you have not been infected by the virus. It only means that the virus has not decided to make enough of itself so that we can detect. So if I test today and I had been exposed 5 days beforehand and I'm negative, that does not mean that I've not been infected. I can have a positive test up to 14 days out, and it is not until that 14-day period that I can say with relative assuredness that I'm not infected. And that is very important to keep in mind, because that forms the basis of our quarantine isolation procedures. That is why, even if you have a negative test, you must quarantine yourself for 14 days. And I want to make sure that that's very clear. I will repeat that in the future so that people understand that concept. Lastly, I want to stress the importance of continued testing. In order for the wonderful work that Dr. Thompson has done for providing us granular data to work, we need to have high numbers of testing in our community. And so I don't want people to back off on the testing. We are offering that at our local health units. We want you to take advantage of that so that we can provide good data to Dr. Thompson for his analysis. And so with that, I'll stop and turn it over to Dr. Thompson.
Governor, Secretary Romero, and Key, thank you for letting me be part of your activities today and our team be contributing. We're excited today in partnership with the Health Department and the Education Department to update the data that we put out last week. So we have updated data on cumulative and active cases at the community level and cumulative and active cases at the school district level. We are adding what I think has been a desired but out of grasp pieces of information, which is actually a tiering of the risk that are in the school districts themselves. Not the schools, not the teachers, not the students, but the community from which the school districts draw. Why is this important? Many of our rural school districts draw from multiple communities, so we needed to have a picture profile of the school district's catchment area, if you will, itself. What we did, and let me explain what's in front of you here, we took the new cases in the last 14 days, as reported by the Health Department, and we tiered them by risk factors into 0 to 9 per 10,000 population, 10 to 19 per 10,000 population, 20 to 29, 30 to 49, and 50 and above. And those are correlated with our dark green, light green, yellow, orange, and red. To date, we have 19 communities that are, or 19 school districts, that have more than 50 per 10,000 infected individuals in their catchment area. These individuals do not include incarcerated individuals. They do not include nursing home individuals. So these are the community risk. We had calls this morning, Commissioner Key, or Secretary Key and I did, with most of those that are above 50. There are some important local interpretation factors. All of these communities are not at a risk for school, because we know that two of them, Magazine and Boonville, have a human development center that is a pocket of positive tests. So this is not a triggering indicator for any active decision. It is a tiered risk indicator so that school districts can know, am I in a school district that I'm in a low-risk situation, or I'm in a school risk district that I'm in a high-risk situation. We also went back, I want to commend the Health Department's team and our ACHI team. We went back to the end of July. So we actually, on the ACHI website, have 4 data points for each school district to give a trend line over the month of August, so that you can see which school districts are moving into greater risk. The website looks like this. You'll see the first one is Alma. They had 26 new cases in the last 2 weeks. We provide the county test rate, which Secretary Romero said was so important to make sure we're testing at a high rate. And then we give you the trend line. Alma went from yellow the 27th of July, yellow the 3rd of August. They're now in the green zone. So they are coming down in terms of their community risk as their school goes into opening next Monday. If it has a number inside of it, that is the rate per 10,000. Okay, so we give you the actual rate per 10,000. If it does not have a number inside of it, that means that the number was less than 10, and we can't give you that for confidentiality purposes. Obviously, if we can get every school district into the green zone, there won't be any numbers because there won't be any cases. That is not where we are now, but that's our goal, is to get as green as possible going forward. We anticipate updating this on a weekly basis, so we will add a new data point each week, which will allow a monitoring mechanism for parents, for school district officials, for personnel, for the state, to know where to allocate resources, where to hold vigilant. We need to hold vigilant across the state, but to where we can have and need increased vigilance to break the spread of this tricky virus. So thank you, Governor, for the opportunity. We'll be glad to take questions later.
Before I add to Dr. Thompson's comments, I do want to show and have an update on the PPE situation. What I have today is an example of a screening kit that is being distributed. We have 2,000 of these that are being delivered to school districts all over the state. There are 1,055 school buildings, so each building will get at least one of these kits, and some of the larger buildings will get multiple kits, depending on their size, the number of entry points that they use. But this kit if a district chooses to screen their employees or their students as they come in, there's a thermometer, there are gloves, there are masks, other PPE, sanitizing wipes, all the things that they need to establish a screening station upon entry to the building. Again, not required, but we wanted to provide this for districts in case this was something they wanted to do. As far as other PPE situations, we continue to support. We have supported over 30 districts this week in making sure that they had sufficient PPE to begin the school year next week. Various supply chain issues have created challenges for them. And if you look at our Facebook page, we have a number of pictures of our loading dock, which has been full of PPE, and co-ops and district staff coming and loading those things up to go be distributed across the state. So we want to be very diligent in making sure that every district has sufficient PPE going into the beginning of school. Now, as far as the school district level data, I want to express my thanks to Dr. Thompson and his team at ACI working with the health department to make this possible. As you see here, this is a similar to documents that we've issued before. This is a refinement of our response level document that we had provided and issued earlier. But what we have is the scale that we just brought over from Dr. Thompson and ACI's numbers for reference. One thing I want to make sure that's clear, there is not a one-to-one transfer from this scale to the response levels. All right, we have the green, yellow, and red. They have a similar scheme, but there are other data points that must be considered in addition to the data that Dr. Thompson and his team have released today. We'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. What you see on the right of the screen is, again, a refinement of things to consider for districts as they understand their local data, as they understand this relative risk that is now being provided for them at the school district level, of some of the things that they may need to consider when they look next week at their plans, as they bring students and staff on site. There may need to be some adjustments. And this data, along with what they learn next week, can help them establish what those adjustments are according to the appropriate response levels. Dr. Thompson mentioned one district, or a couple of districts, that there's some local context. There's also some local context in places like Hector and Dover, where we know that there is a specific church where there were cases that could be traced back to that revival service or those services there. Those are things that districts and superintendents can take into account, not to discount that risk, but to know that it's isolated. So they can look at things like that. For instance, some of these districts that are on the list this week weren't necessarily, if you look at the trends, would not have been on the list last week. There are always things that they can point to. Another example, Cutter Morningstar, Dr. Anderson made sure I was aware that district has a couple of residential treatment facilities where cases can be tracked to that those facilities. Again, it's within the catchment area of the school district, but it is not necessarily a reflection of what may be coming into the school buildings. And that's why I want to make sure that this is very important. This is a tool. This is a data point, but it is not the only data point. Second thing is, or the last thing I want to say is, this is not a policy document. We are not saying that if you fall into this category, you must do these things. Again, the local context always has to be in consideration, and as the governor said, what this does is provide more flexibility for school leaders and superintendents to make these decisions on how to adjust their plans, how to adjust their on-site learning operations, and make the modifications accordingly. And with that, Governor, I'll turn it back to you.
With that, we'll take any questions.
So is this document going to give school districts the ability to say if they are at a high-risk level that right away they could make modifications such as starting out with virtual instruction only, for instance?
No, of course, what this shows them is the risk in the community. And as Secretary Key said, there's a lot of factors that go into play there. You know, how does that impact the school if it's a high-risk area in the community but there's no cases in the school and you've been operating for a couple weeks? Well, there's not any need to adjust to go to a different modification because you're managing it within the school environment and you're making decisions based upon that. If you have a couple of cases that arise within the school, then you have to say, all right, how should we handle this in context of what's happening in the community as well? And hopefully they'll consult, they should consult with the Department of Health and Department of Education and get guidance and we make a decision. But this gives some flexibility but more options to the local school district. And if you look at more of the fine print as you read some of the guidelines and options, it gives them a lot of different ideas as to way that they can adjust to make that environment more safe or tighten it up if they need to based upon that level of risk. And John, you have a comment to add?
So really the idea is that every district has a plan for next week. And some of those plans include anywhere from 20% to upwards of 50% of their students have already opted for virtual learning. That's a very important consideration. Not every district will have every student on campus next week. What they will get the opportunity to do is to see, okay, how are our plans working with the numbers of students we have? How does that relate to that relative risk? And then what changes might need to be made or modifications might need to be made. If it becomes a situation where they find themselves and they say, okay, a critical response is needed, that still doesn't mean that they have to completely go to virtual. That is an option that they have. We've asked them for months to prepare for that. But they could still revert to smaller groups of students coming on site, more stringent screening procedures, more stringent social distancing, limiting the number of students in a particular classroom or in a particular setting. So those are all options, and that's where we've refined the guidance to be able to give them that the flexibility of the options there.
The expectation is they'll have in-person instruction 5 days a week, at least in the beginning.
Yes. Yeah. This does not mean to change. This is not meant to change any of the plans for Monday starting school or whichever day of next week that a district is opening. This gives them a tool to help planning moving forward.
Why not give those high-risk districts the option to start virtually?
Because they have their plan, they have plans in place. We want them to see how those plans are going to work, and we want them to see how, again, some of these that may be on the map as high risk, the local context may be different, that they're not high risk when looking at all the data points.
What if they wanted to?
Well, it's still a situation where we expect and have said all along, we expect on-site instruction to begin in August. That's what we're holding to. We're simply giving another set of tools for them to use to make adjustments as they move forward.
Any other questions?
You talked about PPE. Does every district have sufficient PPE?
Yes. I mean, and Johnny can supplement this if I have anything inaccurate in this, but all the districts, one, have received funds for the purchase of PPE. We've had our reservoir of $1 million of PPE acquisition at the department level to supplement the needs. So if anybody is short, they can have that supplemented by the Department of Education. So there should not be any issues with PPE in any district. I hear somebody about to ready to start remotely. Yes.
Governor, it's Mitch at Channel 4 and Fox. Can you guys walk me through what was that plan process? Was it the Department of Education and the Department of Health communicating with each school? What were some of the questions, you know, being asked of the school districts in regards to their plan? I've seen some photos of classrooms set up across the district, a lot of desks, you know, in those classrooms. So what were some of the questions being asked by each other when coming up with this plan to make sure that it's an appropriate plan?
I'll ask Secretary Key to come up to the microphone, but he has worked very closely with superintendents. I know he's going to be having a call with them the department will be having a call with them at 4 o'clock today. And so there's a regular line of communication. In addition, I'm out there. I get to listen to a lot of them. I've been into some of the classrooms. So there's a lot that goes into the decision-making.
Mitch, that's a good question. And you know, for the last 2+ months, we've been in regular contact with the districts on their planning. We have issued a survey, and we've left that survey open. It wasn't a static survey, so that as their data changed, as their conditions changed, and as their plans became more refined, then they would respond and update their data in that survey. One of the important components of that was simply in their offering of virtual learning to the families in their district, understanding how many students were opting for virtual and how many students would be coming on site. Now, a number of districts are taking that data. We expect all districts to take that data and then make those physical classroom and building adjustments, the routines, the processes and practices, and making sure that the precautions are in place with respect to social distancing, with respect to the hand washing, cleaning, face mask. We've seen a number of districts that have really migrated from more of a less restrictive mask policy over the last 2 to 3 weeks to adopting a rigid mask policy and rigid expectations for that. So the planning process has been very fluid, and we've been very much in contact with those districts to help them and answer any questions as they go about their local planning.
Next question.
This is Cole with 4029 News. Since school nurses are being considered critical infrastructure workers, could this increase the potential of spreading the virus within schools? And even if they do get a negative test and they're still required to quarantine while they're at home, why is it safe to allow them to return to schools before that 14-day quarantine?
Well, you're speaking of school nurses, and school nurses is a part of the staff of the school district, and so you know, they have the same precautions. They have the same requirements. If they have to be quarantined, they should not be returning to work until that quarantine time is finished. And you can follow up if I've missed part of your question, but I think that's the answer. And, Doctor, do you have, or Johnny, do you have?
So, and school nurses being healthcare professionals, we have worked with the health department to create a situation where they are being looked at as similar to healthcare professionals in other settings. All right, so there is an added layer of protection then for these healthcare professionals, even though they're on a school site, maybe not at a medical site. So that's why school nurses have added layers. We've made sure that we have N95 masks. So again, their PPE standards are higher, but it's one of those things where they, if you have the school nurses that become unavailable, then that's a critical response of the medical side of things that happen at a school that would be missing. And school nurses are hard to find. So there are some, I won't say exceptions, because they are the same. It's the same treatment that other nurses and other medical settings are also subject to.
Did you have anything to add? All right. Yeah, we have one more comment here.
So not to befuddle the situation further, nurses are considered essential workers, healthcare personnel. There are exceptions where at a healthcare personnel, if there are critical shortages, can return to work under certain situations and certain screening. So this will depend on what goes forward. As Secretary Key pointed out, they are in a different category. They're being given PPE that's appropriate for them, and we will guide the Department of Education regarding these individuals.
Thank you for that clarification, Dr. Romero. Next question.
Hi, Governor. This is Josh White with KAIT in Jonesboro.
Yes.
I'm wondering if the state is looking at what's going on in North Carolina, North Carolina State, Notre Dame, those things where they allow students, granted these are 18, 20-year-olds, they allow students to come on campus and wear masks, and now NC State, NC, all of these guys are now going to online only. Are we just ignoring that fact, or do we think that we're going to come out differently? Or is this part of the process, is let them get in there, find out, see, and then back up?
Well, and the answer is, one, we don't ignore facts wherever they come from across the country. And if you look at the multitude, actually, there's probably close to half a dozen now that have gone strictly to online in the higher education arena. And that means that there's probably 90% of the colleges are continuing on with in-classroom instruction. And so it varies. And so from an Arkansas standpoint, we have a good plan. As long as the students do what they need to do and the faculty and staff do what they need to do and they're properly motivated, then we have a good chance of getting through this. But there's going to be challenges, there are going to be hiccups, there's going to be some start and stops perhaps, but I trust the plan that we have in place, and I think it gives us as good a chance as anybody to have a good school year, and that's our objective. Right here at the table.
Since there's some school districts have had students or employees have already tested positive, when you combine that with the district level data, could there be some school districts that would be right off the bat starting with some kind of modified plan like online-only instruction?
It's next Monday, and everybody has the plan, as Secretary Key indicated, and we're going to implement that plan, and it starts with on-site instruction, and we'll work through these things. From what I've seen, it makes a difference on the behavior, not just the students, but of the faculty and teachers. They have to set the right example, and I know that they are concerned, and understandably so. That's why we want to really make sure everybody has the right safety measures in place to make it as safe as possible. Yes?
Will schools be able to have the option to go virtually online and limit to less than 5 days if they continue to be in the higher risk level, the ACHI data?
Again, the higher risk level gives information at a more specific data and options that they can consider. It doesn't mean that even if they're in the high-risk level in the community, that they have to shift to online. As the Secretary said, there's many different options that they can take to enhance the safety. Obviously, that is ultimately a possibility that they can go to online, but that's after consultation with the state, and we look at all the data and make the right decision. Johnny?
Yeah, the conversion to online virtual learning is something that we have encouraged and we've been preparing for in the if there was a situation that warranted that. But it's not the same as what we saw in the spring. So is it an option? Yes. Is it an option that they can just do automatically? No. We would expect that they would be in consultation with Health Department and with the Department of Education before they would make a decision to move totally to virtual learning with no on-site operations at all. Because at that point, the other part of the discussion is, well, how long? Well, that's a conversation that the epidemiologists and other experts at the health department would have to look at the data that's going on there. And you're talking about something that we would view as a very severe, necessary but severe reaction to get to a point where we would have to close completely for on-site instruction.
Is there any final questions?
Governor, good afternoon. It's Neil Gladner in Hot Springs. To Secretary T's example about Qatar Morningstar, I just coincidentally was looking at their numbers just before the press conference began, and if Secretary T hadn't outlined the number of the rehab centers in that school district that really don't impact the general population, a parent might not know that. How does that kind of information get communicated so parents don't get more scared than they need to be?
Well, we'll hope to continue to refine the information to provide that at a more deeper level. But for the time being, that's the kind of communication we want to make, answer those questions, and parents need to understand that these are community assessments of risk. It's not the school district that's at risk. It's the assessment of the community, and they need to understand the community. We need to get the facts out about that. So I hope that they will inquire, and the superintendents obviously can lead in that discussion. That's why you get information from our Department of Health, our Department of Education. They understand the broader context, and they're the communication flow to the community. With that, thank you. Final question, I hear it.
I'm sorry, this is Josh again at KIT in Jonesboro. Are schools going to face any kind of repercussions if video or pictures start coming up of changing classrooms, no mask, no distancing? What's the repercussion of... We want them to be good stewards, but sometimes people are stubborn.
Go ahead, Johnny. I'll let you try that first.
You know, first I would say the repercussions are not something they should be concerned about. The state, having some type of penalty imposed on them, but the initial repercussion is you may not be able to continue school. You may not be able to continue your activities, your band concerts or your football games or your volleyball games. I mean, that's the repercussions are what happens in your community. We have created school in our society to be such a critical aspect of our communities, and if the precautions are not being followed, then that places that entity at risk of not being able to provide what we expect in our communities that our schools do provide so well. If we are notified of occasions and occurrences like that, we will probably very likely pick up the phone to the superintendent and say, "Superintendent, are you aware we're getting this information? What are you doing to fix it?" That's what needs to happen. These decisions and the reinforcement of these precautions really need to happen more at the local level, because the local individuals and communities need to understand that it's going to impact them more broadly than just being able to have normal on-site school.
And I heard
Governor, Could I ask Dr. Romero just a second.
To the previous questioner, were you going at the consequences to the individual doing the taping or the consequences to the school?
Consequences to the school, but also curious if the picture taker would also be punished.
Yeah, and that's what I heard on that, and in reference to that, no, that's up to the school districts, but I don't expect that to be a consequence. As Johnny said, it's more important that we take the information and realize the impact that it could have on the school year, and we want to act appropriately to make sure we do everything we can for the compliance that we need. And did I hear one final question?
Yeah, this is Cole again. I was wondering if Dr. Romero could clarify for me. Will school nurses still be allowed to return to work at schools while under quarantine because of potential contact?
So the standard is they should remain quarantined for 14 days. There are exceptions, and it depends on the circumstances. If there is a critical need, then we will reassess that based on guidance that already exists. So the standard is 14 days quarantine after exposure.
Thank all of you very much today, and we'll hopefully see you tomorrow.